This is the Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, the Tigers prove they've got bigger claws than the Cats. Sydney ends West Coast's winning streak and the Saints pull off the miracle at Metricon. Plus, as the Blues flag an aggressive off-season trade approach, Jimmy Bartel comes up with a creative answer to their list problems.
Getting it to the outside, Gresham Bendiet! Would you believe it? St Kilda in front with a minute to go! An incredible final quarter comeback!
Long steps on the gas, couple of bounces, got a calm McGovern, too late, Rock goals, gets his second.
Butler breaks three of one, breaks three of another, can you believe that kick to Rewalk?
Hello and welcome to the Age Real Footy Podcast. My name is Michael Gleeson and joining us today is Chief Footy Writer Jake Nile. As always, welcome Jake.
Thanks Michael.
And wet weather specialist, long jumper favourite, Jimmy Bartel. Welcome Jimmy.
We've moved this podcast outside just to suit my conditions. We've moved it out in the rain so I can
perform. Wouldn't you have loved to have been playing in that game on Sunday, Jimmy?
I was at the MCG and I was champing at the bit. I really wanted to play. Does that sound a bit weird? Do you want to get out in the worst?
Because you've talked about how you play. Like, I remember one thing I heard you doing commentary on Seven at the Carlton Essendon game. Yes. I think you said you've got to almost budget on a fumble.
Yep. Yeah. So often people make their decisions based on if you receive the ball, they then make the decision: do I spread out to the fat side, or I get in position to receive a kick or a handball? But if you change your mindset to everybody's going to make a mistake, so get over closer to the contest. And then also, it's just fundamentals, and it's playing the odds over and over again. So, and the process is quicker than this, but the way I used to think about it is take the ball cleanly first, and that was the only focus. Then the next decision comes off that. Do I handball, do I kick? So that was sort of a bit of the thinking process that I went about it on a wet day.
It's like a card counting system.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep playing the odds over and over and over again.
Do the odds also say, therefore, don't overuse the ball and it's don't handball? But, I mean, you're making that decision. Do you handball or do you kick?
Yeah, but for me, it wasn't – when in dry day, you go to a contest and you go, look, we need to kick it, or we need to do this, or handball, or put someone in space, or my exit space there. You're almost stripping it back even further. It's just – I just need to take the ball cleanly. I need to stand up in the tackle. Then I'm at that decision. And you're doing, obviously, as I said, quicker than this. Well, unless someone's clearly out by hand, well, then I'm going to kick it. And you can kick it more direct. So the players are so literal and trained so much that we see them, you know, enter into the forward line wide to the boundary because that's a safe kick. But you can actually kick it directly into the middle because the odds of it being marked is pretty
low. Well, cut to the chase. Did Geelong follow those sort of principles enough?
Well, it's funny, they got the whole game probably got the best conditions of the whole entire day, didn't it? We saw hammering rain before and after the game. I just think Richmond's bottom six, and I mean this respectfully, like your 16 to 22 ranked players, whoever you may be, but I think most people agree who they are from both sides. I think they completely outperformed Geelong's bottom six. So they just got their even spread across the board, and they all sort of just did a little bit more in their position.
Yeah, and the small forwards, I mean, well, a couple of them are among those guys, aren't they?
What Geelong was missing was magnified by what Richmond had, I think.
Yeah, and what Richmond did really well is they kept their feet in the contest, especially in the forward half. I reckon they kicked two goals from Geelong players taking the option of, I've got to go to ground. As soon as you go to ground, you just invite more pressure, and then what are you going to do if you do pick it up once you're on the ground? You're either going to get caught holding the ball, or if you stand up, you've got no momentum. So we saw a couple of goals from Richmond. They keep their feet. They keep the ball alive. You don't have to take it cleanly. They just keep working the ball to advantage.
I thought, Gleese and Jimmy, the biggest difference in the game was Richmond's ability, you alluded to this in your column, to kick dirty goals from broken play, small forwards, I think five goals from those small forwards on a low-scoring day. Geelong just could not – I mean, Hawkins has kicked three, so you have to say he's done his job.
It should have been really four, the set shot at the end.
So
Geelong have a ground game problem in their front half. How do they solve that, Jimmy?
Well, the problem for them is that their small forwards, or who's classified as a small forward, have constantly injured and hurt, so lack the continuity of playing. So if you look at the last two years, Butler, Castagna, I know Rioli recently has been hurt, whoever else
Graham.
Graham. they've all played probably 80%, 90% of the games in the last 2 years. But you go through Geelong, Gregson's missed football, Lincoln McCarthy's missed football. Fogarty is in his fifth or sixth game. We haven't seen Cockatoo. Jermaine Jones has played one or two games. Parsons is in and out of the side.
It sounds a lot like Menzel being not the small, but
it sounds a lot like a litany of excuses.
Well, they're not excuses. It's just a reality. Yeah, that's the truth
of what they've got.
That's what they got. So you actually guys who have actually formed a craft at AFL level and are elite at that space versus guys who are either in and out of the side or just coming into the game. So Geelong's decision going forward is, do we go with these young players again and hope that this is their big moment, they'll settle the next time we play Richmond? Or do we go and, you know, play Menzel and the older experienced guys who we sort of, at least we might get some more goals, but we won't get the pressure that these guys bring?
I thought that the Geelong was so ahead in the clearances and had that advantage in the third quarter of territory. And I sensed that Richmond would win the game at three-quarter time because Geelong had such a territorial edge in that latter part of the third quarter.
That same they just ongoing don't score. Question for Geelong of, well, where do we use danger most dangerously? Is he forward? Because we can't get goals.
Yeah, and their ball use was terrible, Geelong. Going inside 50, it was horrible. And that's been a problem in big games in recent times, is their inside 50 efficiency, which is one big key stat now in footy, because if sides are going to squeeze you and play really hard defence, you've got to make the most of your opportunities going inside 50. And I openly put my hand up. I'm a ticket holder of the Nick Vlosten fan club.
Yeah.
He was sensational.
Best on the ground, I thought.
Yeah, by mile. 21 touches, but could you have a bigger impact on a game? He was fantastic.
But some of his marking, Jimmy, a bit reminiscent of someone else I saw playing a long sleeve jumper for Geelong, but marking with the wet ball.
Yeah, he was
just, he was so clean.
And that was the other factor too, that so he at times was spare. Stewart was sometimes spare for Geelong. Richmond got better effect out of their spare defender than Geelong did.
They you've been in Richmond's sort of situation. Did that magnify the gulf between the two teams? One that's trying to sort of be there, but Richmond being the team that just had the gear to go to and had more evenness in their game to know that they would eventually prevail.
Well, they look like they got the mindset of, well, we will find a way to win. It's not, oh, geez, I hope we don't lose. That's a completely different mindset when you go into a game that if we just keep playing this game out, we'll get there. You actually think you're going to win at any situation, at any stage. And we saw, you know, Cochin and Martin, you know, the leaders, you know, towards the end of the third quarter and the last quarter, they just kept, you know, pushing and driving because they had that belief that they were going to get over the line.
And they were down earlier in the game. Okay, if it's not Geelong, which it may not be, who is the team that if we come to the grand final day and Richmond's one of the teams in it, who's the team that has the best chance if they happen to... Who's the best chance of knocking them out in a prelim or a grand final?
On the MCG.
On the MCG.
So, yeah, that's the key thing. You'd maybe think Sydney have a better record of playing in Melbourne than West Coast, but this is where there's a massive opportunity for Melbourne. Now, we haven't seen enough of it, and they're still doing that transition up to be a top four side. But as we said, they do play the MCG a lot, and if they actually sense or, you know, actually start believing that they're a good side and consistently put it together, well, then that MCG factor isn't as great as, say, West Coast coming over.
Yeah. You think Melbourne then?
I'm not confidently saying that. So I'll probably say Sydney because it's just a hard and experienced side that's been to the MCG and played big finals.
What do you think, Jake?
My instinct is that it would be Sydney, but I don't have enough information about Melbourne and Collingwood. And indeed, my instinct is that Port Adelaide, probably on the MCG, would be a hard ask coming from down there. Yeah, I'm not. I think they're a fair way in front at the MCG. This is a big issue, and that's why the top two in the finals order is massive.
Yeah, I think
absolutely massive. If Sydney and West Coast get ahead of Richmond, which I don't think both of them will, then it would change the whole complexion of the finals.
Yep, correct.
Did the complexion of the finals change at all on what happened in the Sydney West Coast game, or did that just verify both teams are good at home? That West Coast are very good. I mean, they have travelled well, but they've never travelled well to the SCG. And
I think it was big for Sydney. Yeah. I don't think it was said as much about West Coast. I think West Coast, without Darling,
and Barris,
and Barris, I think West Coast had a pretty creditable performance, actually. It's just the low scoring. I mean, that.
Yeah, Barris out, even though he's not the superstar, but what became evident on Friday night was, well, you can send him to Franklin to do the arm across, which then frees up McGovern.
Yeah.
And that's where he's most dangerous. And I'm not sure who'd be getting it between the eyes from on the West Coast bench, because West Coast had the game for some reason in what wasn't a high running game, because they're playing a bit of kick-to-kick from half-back to half-back for most of it, who decided to rest McGovern for that long period in the third quarter. Franklin got a hold of West Coast, and that was the game, in a low-scoring game. So I don't think you needed to rest him for so long in the third quarter.
They're young players, Sydney, as well. Were really, I thought Papley was just fantastic. That was
Ollie Florent was fantastic.
Sorry, Florent as well.
Yeah. So we talk about a lot of young sides and their development, and the likes of Brendan McCartney's been spoken about at Melbourne, but I'd be making some calls or snooping around Sydney to find out who does the development at the Swans, because the NEAFL is quite a big step below AFL level, but yet they get these young kids schooled up, ready to play AFL football, and they come straight in to AFL level, and they just play the Sydney way time and time again.
We'll look at St Kilda after this, but they could be looking at, could and should be looking at Sydney and the number of rookies that they've been able to select and then turn into senior players. We'll take a look at the Saints coming up after this.
If you've got a tip, feedback or a question for the hosts, email us at realfootypod@fairfaxmedia.com.au.
Longer, that'll do it. St Kilda aren't going to lose now. McCartan gets there after Thompson dropped it. An incredible win. Richo's alive. They go into the bye on a big high out of nowhere.
Welcome back. Well, the Saints, that was, if they were going to do it against any side, have a comeback like that, it was going to be against the Gold Coast.
Haven't scored a goal for what?
A month.
A month. So, in the last quarter.
In the last quarter.
So the Gold Coast have gone 200 minutes in the last quarter for 2 points. That is so poor. You might as well, it's like they've taken the batteries out of them at three-quarter time. They're just refusing to play the last quarter.
Well, you mentioned before about the difference in mindset of the team that thinks they can win and the team that wants to hang on. They went into that last quarter thinking, let's just hang on. We've done enough. We'll park the bus and this will be okay. Well, it just seemed
I think there was an element here, Gleese, of the St Kilda mature players like Armitage finishing strongly and the stronger bodies coming in at those stoppages late in the game and getting the advantage. And Billy Long's tap, a couple of his efforts at late in the game justified, I suppose, why they picked him.
Oh, well, there's some poor defensive structures from the Gold Coast, and I'll give you that one in the last quarter, but that doesn't speak to the last four last quarters where they haven't scored at Gold Coast. So it has to be a mix of fitness, mindset, and then also coaching, because the structures that they put in place says to the players, oh, just go out there and hang on with you, because you can't go that long without kicking a goal. And the excuse of being young and whatever, but we're not just talking about one game.
I was giving some credit to St Kilda.
Yeah,
for individuals at St Kilda.
Yeah, I'm giving credit to St Kilda, and Gresham's finish was top notch. Like, that was unbelievably classy, and the way they boxed on and fought on for their coach, it was great to see. But let's just not skim over Gold Coast's last quarter.
No, equally, they had lost Webster, who's probably been one of their best players this year, and Rice. To be two down. And to, 39 points at one point.
To be, mind you, to be 39 down is an absolute debacle.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other side of the same coin.
St Kilda could not have picked a team that was more geared towards winning that game. Like, they weren't playing Caulfield. They were going for season players. So they had to win the game.
They weren't fast, though. I mean, that's their problem.
That's their problem.
And for three quarters, the hares outran them. And they...
The tortoise has got there.
I don't know quite what you can do about that. But they have sacked, they've changed list manager. We were discussing earlier that the idea of timing, and it is the right timing to make that sort of change.
Yeah, why
now,
is that, Jimmy?
Yeah, well, for that position within a football club, list and recruiting, it has to be done now if you're going to do it. If you wait till November, it's too late, because you've had draft, you've had trade, you've had free agency. So this time of year, look, we pick up the paper and we're hearing, oh, this player's re-signed, this player's re-signed, this player's holding off. So your list manager's got to go around and have all those conversations with player managers and footy clubs. So you've got to actually start positioning yourself, because then if you get them, how does that then affect how many draft picks we take in, where are we salary cap wise? So you actually need someone to have a run into that really hot period at post the grand final, which turns into all the player movement period.
Well, I think Simon Lefflane will take carriage of that area until they get someone, basically. Certainly he'd be looking at everything that, that Tony Elshaw's offered to players, and there's various players they've offered a lot of money to, you know, the likes of Gaff, etc. So
I also just think there's the absolute footy logic to doing it, but there's also, I think in a broad media and PR sense, it was smart. It was like, don't worry, we know where we're at. We know the changes we need to be making. We're not comfortable. We're not sitting on our hands, and we're implementing this change. We know that the list is the problem. And that is the thing, that it also flagged to me, is that they know that the list is as big a problem as anything that people will assume about coaching.
Yeah, well, I'd spoken to them during the week, Lise, and written a piece about it, and flagging some of the things that were in favour of Alan Richardson keeping his job. Doesn't mean he's 100% going to keep his job, but there were things in his favour. And one of the key things, I think almost the key thing, was the internal view at St Kilda that the list was the main issue. Start with the list, and then there were things that were in the coaching panel, that the way the coaching has been done, that they don't like, but that overall it's the player list that's their main problem.
You agree with that?
Yeah, and I'm always of the belief that clubs should always get an external reviewer of their list every year, because what happens is, if you're going to ask a list or a recruiting bloke on players on the list, of course they're going to have the natural bias because they selected them.
Yeah.
You want them to go well. Coaches who might be emotionally invested in players is going to go see the good side in them. So, yeah.
There's a nice little business opportunity there, Jimmy.
What do you reckon, set
up a little external
They should set one up out of the football department of the AFL, because it'd be saving a lot of clubs a lot of money, because instead of doing rebuild after rebuild and coaches being moved on, you might be able to avoid some of these, I guess, moments that happen in clubs where they decide to move coaches and staff on, which costs them a lot of money.
Okay, I want to put you on the spot quickly. Is St Kilda's bigger problem the list or what they're getting out of the list?
It's a combination of both, and I think development has got to be a greater focus. So by the time you pay your coach and your footy manager and your football cap spend, you should still hold your development as high as you hold your list manager, because you can have a swag of top 10 picks. We go back to Melbourne 5-6 years ago. They just came in and out the door. There's a top 10 pick. 3 years later, there they go.
They can't have all been busts.
No, exactly. So you've got to develop them as well, to be ready to be AFL players. These kids are only playing tack cut footy against kids with noodle arms. They're not used to playing against adults and in the proper system.
Good reason to wear long sleeves too.
Exactly.
That did remind me of the line before, that there is a line from a recruiter that says, a list manager that says, we've got to get him out of the club or else the coach will keep playing him. Exactly. And that is a truth in recruiting and list.
So we go back to Peter Summers' comments. We thought we were a top four side. Now, if someone externally had come and go, oh, that's Peter. Lovely, Peter, you're selling it, but the reality...
I don't think I'm giving away trade secrets to say there was a briefing down at St Kilda earlier this year where some of the media were questioning the club about the list before the season, and there was a little bit of defensiveness in some quarters, acknowledgement in others, but I think that the media people were saying, well, your list is... Where's the A-graders? That question's been asked for a long time at St Kilda.
Yeah, so, well, out of the weekend, there were the two teams. It was St Kilda and Carlton. Who dodged? Did Carlton's second half save them in any manner? Because they ended up outscoring them in the second half, which was not difficult given you don't kick a goal for the first half. But they were pathetic, and they were less pathetic in the second half.
Yeah, they didn't achieve anything for me in the second half. I was at that game. They threw an extra number behind the ball, and Freo leading into a bye round, leading by 70 plus points. It's let's put the queue on the rack and let's all head to Byron Bay or wherever we're going for our holiday break.
Carlton seemed to go to Byron Bay before the game.
They were still there. They were still
Mark
on the
Murphy was there.
Yeah, they were still on the banana lounge in the first half, because Brendan Bolton's right. No player goes out there and doesn't put in effort, but they just weren't switched on. It's slow decision-making, slow to transition, poor decision-making. I would have been so disappointed.
Is that leadership?
It was a lot of their leaders actually that didn't stand up in that first half. Some of them who had massive numbers in the second half, people were raving about, but you went back to quarter time and they didn't touch it and were part of the big problem. Like, Lachie Neale must have been thinking, are they playing a couple short here? Because he was just waltzing around in the first half. He had 22 and 3 goals.
The more incriminating thing about Carlton is that Freo was younger.
Freo was younger.
So you can't hang your hat just on that. I know they had Fife and they had Neil, so they had stars.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm giving them one excuse here.
Right.
And that's the fact with Carlton is they don't have senior players who take the core roles within the team. So Zach Fisher has to come in and play key on-ball position.
Hang on, Cruiser's in the ruck.
Cruiser's in the ruck. But just compared to the side of the week, you've got Charlie Curno who's having to play centre forward. You've got young players having to play key roles all the time. You go to Freo, you've got Sandilands hitting down to Fife, Neil, Mundy's on the half forward line. You've got experienced players doing the key core roles. So then the likes of Giro and Banfield.
What you're saying is you've got pillars at Freo and you don't have them at Carlton.
Exactly. You've got the experience. So you come in and you don't have to be – and Sydney do the same. So Ollie Florent, we talk about, he doesn't have to come in and be the go-to man in a centre bounce. You've got Kennedy, Parker – these sort of guys who take the pressure off.
Whereas Cripps is like the mummy. He's got so many bandages on this year.
Yeah, Paddy Cripps.
He's the most – he could be the most targeted player in the competition.
You've got to stop.
Yeah, exactly. Why wouldn't you? It was a bit like Nathan Jones for years at Melbourne.
Yeah.
Oh, let's just put time into Nathan Jones. Who else is going to beat us?
It is a problem of list building is that – I mean, I wrote something out of that game and saying that, well, in 15 they then went with the two talls in the top 10 picks and you get – Wiedering and McKay. Therefore, you have to invest time because they're not going to have an impact for 4 years. But you've got to be absolutely certain that they will, in that period, continue to get better and then have that impact down the track. I think they'd still have doubts on those two players, whether or not, having invested heavily in the draft and time, whether they will come through to be the players that they want them to be.
But Freo nailed their draft. Brayshaw and Chera.
But they're midfielders.
But it's easier to nail the midfielders.
But why, we all say that, so why aren't we taking midfielders with our first half a dozen picks?
Well, just to go to another club that's not playing this week, but wasn't playing last week, sorry, Collingwood. Collingwood criticised for not having the key position players, but their strike rate, now that Scharenberg's come in, of getting Stevenson, Scharenberg, and in particular De Goey. Those players are A-grade talent, and you can't go wrong.
What I was saying, you're right, because I wrote as well, there is a theory that to expedite your development, you take your elite picks and you take elite midfield talent. You were going to have a faster rise, and then you have to use picks or trades or free agency to find the key positions later on. We'll leave it there. Coming up, Just Between Us.
Just Between Us. Welcome to another edition of Just Between Us. Sam McClure and Daniel Cherney getting a lot of Chris Judd's cohesion at the moment. We've been doing this segment together for some time now, Daniel. Welcome.
Continuity, a bit Langer and Hayden-esque.
Yes. Who usually took the first ball?
I think Langer did, which is funny because he was sort of the smaller one. But
well, a bit like you. Take the first ball.
Thanks, Sam. Sam, just between us, St Kilda finally on, well, not on the board, but getting their second win of the season.
Well, that's not just between us. I mean, We all saw that.
Well, not many people were there on the Gold Coast to watch.
No, that's a fair.
But just between a few thousand. But just between us, Sam, for the past 12 or so weeks, there's been a bit of a feed going on at the Saints every week because just between us, St Kilda's executive have been buying the club staff donuts.
What?
Every week the Saints lose. I believe... I would imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I think to boost morale. But certainly there have been donuts that have been purchased. So the donuts, I'd imagine, will see. No. The Saints have been getting donuts, a bit like Sandringham's goal tally yesterday.
So they've been getting donuts off the on the field when they lose, in no points.
Correct.
So they get donuts actually literally
delivered. Literally off the field, donuts.
That is one of your better Just Between Us's, Daniel.
Thank you, Sam. Sam, Just Between Us.
Yes.
Essendon, Jake Nile last week reporting that Essendon are looking strongly at Mitch Wallace from the Western
Bulldogs.
Yes,
exclusive from Jake, yes.
No, you're at surprise that Jake would be breaking news.
No,
but
he does that routinely. More than most people have hot meals.
Correct, but just between us, I hear that there may have been a phone call put in from a certain other former Bulldog now at Essendon, a guy by the name of Jake the Package Stringer.
Oh, maybe a sort of a come over here, things are pretty good over here sort of thing.
Well, I mean, they're flying at 5-7, a couple of spots above the Bulldogs on the ladder, so...
Well, a bit of sarcasm from you as well.
It's unlike me.
It is unlike you, dripping with disdain.
So, yeah, perhaps a phone call's been put in, Sam.
Oh, just another follow-up from a Jake Nile exclusive. What a way to finish another episode of Just Between Us.
Just Between Us.
Look out.
Here is Burgoyne. Look at this. Look at this. And listen to this.
Welcome back. He was all silk, as you would expect. Sean Burgoyne, does he play on, Jimmy?
I think he should. He's pretty good in his 350th. He's a guy who's not limping to 350, is he? He's absolutely accelerating. And what he does well, and all sides cry out for it, is guys who use the ball well by foot.
Now, if for any reason Hawthorn thought they wanted to go younger, is there a club that should look at him? I mean, you think of Port Adelaide straight away to do the sort of LeBron James thing and go back there. Is there a club, if he wanted to go on and Hawthorn said no, because they've done this with...
Has happened with...
They've done players. It with other players. Is there a club he should look at that, or should look at him?
Oh, there's a lot of clubs that should look at him.
Well, just single one or two out.
Well, one or two, and I don't know whether he'd want to go through that building process as well. Look, I reckon he'd look fantastic in Cats colours, wouldn't he? Sit him on the wing out there.
I reckon there's probably eight teams in the top eight that would do
it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That polish as well. And
why wouldn't he? He's elite.
He's still got his speed, still kicks the ball beautifully well. He can play him in 3 to 4 positions on the ground.
So if you're Hawthorn, should he get a contract now, an offer now, or should they just... They probably should wait till the end of the year still, shouldn't they?
If his body's sound, I'd just give it to him and say... You
now?
What's the difference between now and in 8 weeks?
You've seen those versus...
Injury.
We had Birchall on. I was talking to Grant Birchall about him and saying, well, because Burgoyne is the sort of player that they throw to all different positions, when you play with a player like that, do you fancy him playing on your shoulder behind the ball or kicking to him?
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of him. If I was a forward, I'd love him playing on the half forward line because he knows the right kicks to kick to a forward.
Yeah.
Half back line, it'd be... Geez, it's not reassuring having Sean Burgoyne. He's going to structure us up really well. So let's stick him in the middle of two of those positions and put him on the wing.
Now, an honest question. Did you watch the Hawthorn Adelaide game or did you watch the Socceroos?
I'm going to be honest. I probably watched about 20% of the Hawthorn game, but I was very lucky. I caught the James Sicily, I reckon, 15-minute patch where he just flipped the game on its head with unbelievable kicking.
Confession, more of the Socceroos, but I went back and watched most of the Hawthorn game later. Hawthorn were good and Adelaide were poor. And
We know one of them won't make the eight, but the other one has actually got a good... They're not there now.
They've got a good draw, Hawthorn.
Yeah, great draw.
We probably don't recognise enough that they've played all of the top eight early in the season. Not everyone has. Of those, Collingwood and Melbourne haven't. Of those that are in the eight, their run home's softer or better than it was in the first half. Do they get there?
It's going to be right on the wire, I think. I mean, if they beat the teams below them, but there will be upsets. I mean, it's games like playing Essendon. I think Essendon are the team that could well shape the eight because they're the one team in the bottom seven
that's
got the ability to... It's underperformed. It's got the ability to just beat a team. Hmm. They did beat Port Adelaide earlier this year. They could beat a Hawthorn or a Port or someone of that ilk or a Collingwood. They could beat one of those sides.
Well, they beat Geelong as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's what it's going to probably come down to, those sort of games. Yeah, look, Hawthorn, well, the draw says they probably just sneak in.
It's odd that, though, isn't it, that the team outside the eight that you're thinking has underperformed and can shape things isn't the Premier from 2 years ago, who the Dogs had another game the other night.
Or nor the grand finalist from last year.
Or nor the grand... Well, there's probably a bit more of an alibi for them with injuries this year. But
well, I think at 6-3, I thought they were doing pretty well, Adelaide, with the injuries they'd had. But now at 6-7 and the last four, and the backside seems to have fallen out of them. It's not acceptable what we saw on Saturday night, is it?
Yeah, I'm not as critical maybe as you because I know all sides will say that they have injuries, but they're top-end injuries and they're the type of players that make them go. And you heard Tex Walker and other Adelaide players going, we just can't get any flow in our game. It's because the guys who create the flow in their game are all missing. We keep forgetting Brody Smith. We won't see it all this year.
Crouch.
But I'm just that half back line, like Brody Smith and
Laird.
And Laird the desk back there.
Mm.
Like they provide all the rebound. And
Sloan, of course.
Yeah, and if you wrote down in a couple of lines, what's Adelaide's mode of football? Get at those halfbacks. They hit up Tom Lynch, who's missed a considerable amount of football. He turns around, spins, and goes to their forward line where Walker's been in and out, and the midfielders just haven't been there, which makes actually Bryce Gibbs' season look pretty impressive going over there.
And I think there is a difference. Like you can win some games when injuries strike, but then the cumulative effect week after week of playing without them, I'm more prepared to give them a bit of a pass on that.
Yeah, you're replacing a top five player on your list constantly with a player who's in their 20s.
Jimmy, is there anything other than injuries? I'm saying, yeah, of course it's the injuries that have mainly been responsible for this, but there's got to be more to it than just the injuries.
Well, losing heightens that, doesn't it? Because you go looking for other reasons, don't you? So if they were able to keep winning, would we be...
They're not winning.
I know they're not winning, but...
But it is a different... Like we're saying from last year, look at the players that are out, but also those that... Gibbs has come in, yes, but Cameron and Lever out from last year. Exactly. They're significant players out. I mean, I know they're both coincidentally injured at the new clubs, but they were really important players with them last year. But the Dogs, that was just another game to reinforce how far they've fallen and how little we expect of them now, isn't it?
Oh, I think the thing is, the interesting thing about the Bulldogs is they've fallen this far and there's very little, it's not a very contentious subject even.
No,
we don't even think of it as being that topical now.
Well, the big difference is that they won one. And it doesn't matter whether now you look back and say, oh, it's a fluked flag, if there is such a thing. They won it, everything fell into place. And they say the same themselves, that everything fell into place for us. We, and really we weren't set up for long-term success given, but we won it. So,
and then you look at the teams.
What does Kilda say compared to that? We didn't.
Yeah, well, you look at the teams that the Bulldogs are fielding. They're the youngest teams in the competition.
That's by choice.
That's there by choice, yeah.
Adelaide situation where they've got a dozen players out and we're down to, we're up to our third pick in last year's draft. The guys running around in there.
Have we been light on them, Jimmy?
No, I just think we're seeing the same stuff over and over again. The worrying thing for me is the Doggies. You don't want them to fall back into the Doggies before they won the premiership where we just, the Doggies played this weekend. Now, that's only 35 games ago they won the premiership. And I think why we hold them to a higher standard and we say it's more than a fluke 4 weeks, they still won 15 games that year.
Yeah.
People keep forgetting. It wasn't like they snuck in on 12 and a half and then they caught fire for 4 weeks.
And the other thing was the last game they could have won, but they rested a lot of players. Players were coming back from injury over when they played Fremantle in Perth. So they didn't pick four-ball team. They rested guys like Morris.
Yeah, so you're in furious agreement that they are actually better for that season.
Yeah.
So therefore, how do we account for such a difficult drop?
I don't know what's going wrong down there.
Well, I just think that look at the names on the sheet. That's most of it. Pickens not playing. Yeah, Woods now gone.
You've got Dunkley. You've had Wallace. You've had Jong, Roughhead, all playing in their AFL side.
That's true.
Mm. Yeah, there's
not settled in their selection.
Yeah.
And now they've lost McRae as well, which doesn't help. Melbourne, you mentioned them as being one for possibly for Richmond playing the MCG. What do you take out of Queen's Birthday and how they therefore respond to that this week?
Well, the bye came at a good time because that was so disappointing. Because
one of the best lines in football, the bye came at a good time.
We needed that, we needed to get away. But it was frustrating to watch because I've seen Melbourne play at their absolute best. And I think that's when you get frustrated with sides when you know their capability. I saw... 2 weeks before it and even the weeks before that, hard-nosed, inside, contested footy, but they got flogged in that by Collingwood.
Well, I've got a concern about how they play, Jimmy, which is that they win a lot of contested ball and they get the ball. They're very good when the ball goes their way, but I don't see them as a team that's set up to win the ball back as well as some other sides like Richmond. I don't see a defensive structure that some of the other sides have got. I think it's a little bit, not all duck and no dinner, but they're geared for offence.
I also thought that they looked slow. And that behind the ball, Vince and Lewis behind the ball, I think is a real problem for
them. Can you play both of those guys?
You can, but I'm going to agree with both of you. My concern is playing both of them at halfback.
Yeah.
Now, it's one or the other down at halfback. I'd prefer Lewis at halfback because he can set up really well. But it's more the fact that you're actually not playing Burnie to his strengths for me. Bernard Vince is a player you pick for someone in the midfield, and he pretty much, you know, annoys the hell out of him, and he wins enough of the ball. Because against Collingwood, I know we're going back in time here, if it feels like in footy, is you then played Viney on De Goey and different types. So you're robbing Viney of what he does well, which is going after the ball. So you're, now you're actually losing two positions. So bring Burnie in to play the job on with it, side bottom, De Goey, Pendlebury, and let Viney go to his strengths, which was winning the clearances.
Well, Collingwood seemed to get a lot of latitude. We talked about this before, but they seemed to get a lot of room. Big looks when they got the ball around the middle of the ground and half back.
They bat deep in the midfield, though.
This week, we don't expect Jack Watts to be there, which is a bit of a disappointment. Obviously dropped last week. Head to head, there's a self-interest in me asking this because I'm going to write about it later in the week. Wines v. Oliver.
Yep.
Who do you take?
Geez, Wines is in absolutely hot form at the moment, but Oliver's having a cracking season. I'm going to make it even more confusing. I think it's
Viney.
No, it's who wins the battle between Ryder and Gorn will actually affect who wins that contest. So I didn't answer your question. I just sort of...
No, you gave me enough to tease it out for later in the week.
There you go.
Coming up, quick questions.
Like what you're hearing? Tell your mates. The Age Real Footy Podcast.
Now Richards taking an extraordinarily good kick from here. And that is an extraordinarily good kick. He's got three in the quarter.
Well, Eddie thinks he should have been at Collingwood as under the grandfather-son, great-grandfather-son, great-uncle-son rule. But Ed Richards, is he a rising star roughie?
I think he should be better than a roughie, really. I openly admit he's one of my favourite players already. I love the way he plays his football. He started across half-back, but when they were struggling the other night and Thursday night, he was one player who kept trying to lift the Doggies, and that impressed me so much.
I just remember last year I did a story. At the time I was at Fox, showed a bit of footage of him. The grandson of Ron Richards said to someone at Collingwood in the recruiting department, Gleese, "Oh, what about young Ed Richards? Is he a chance for you would be looking at him?" "Oh, no, he's not much good." No. Okay, they really rate him then. Straight away concluded.
He's a gun.
Carlton has said that they will chase elite talent. There are very few ways to get it other than free agency or the very pointy end of the draft if you want seasoned talent. Is there a realistic way to use pick one that should be in play, Jimmy?
Oh, that's a good one. We all love playing hypothetical list manager, don't we? But we will play that game right now. For me, I'd love to try and get both McGoverns, obviously with having the same manager being brothers. That pick one, could you offer pick one up to the Crows, and we'll think they'll land about pick 7 or 8. Would you trade pick one for 7 and 8? So Carlton will get 7 or 8, but they also get Mitch McGovern. Adelaide get pick one, which is a South Australian talent, which will spike their interest.
Jack Lacocious.
So obviously being a South Australian talent top end, but in return you get a player who can play straight away, plus it's still a high pick.
So they keep an interesting inside top proposal. 10 and then
you start exploring, how can I get his brother with a future pick?
That's a not indecent proposal.
No, it's not an indecent proposal. Where will Mark Murphy be playing next year, Jake?
Well, look, it's definitely up in the air. There's no, at the moment, I still always say that the incumbent club is slightly favoured. But I think...
In fact, your captain might be more than just incumbent.
Well, no, but he's looking at his options.
How much should they bring him into these sort of list management discussions? So should he be, we're talking about next week or two, should Brendan Bolton, Soss sit there and go, this is seriously where we're going realistically. Don't sell him the pipe dream, but tell him exactly where they're going. This is what we're going to do.
I think generically, yes, but I don't think he needs to be on all the specifics.
I think he should be, because he served the time of playing with this side.
And he's the leader.
You can't rob him of his last 3 years by just selling a pipe dream. He needs the honest truth.
You're asking me which way I want to lead the club. Well, you're leading him one way and I'm leading him another. He has to know.
Well, you don't want to see, well, we've offered, you know, Gaff $1 million a year. I don't think it's got to be to that level of detail.
Yeah, but you've got to say, we're going to go target some free agents to help us improve quicker.
No, I think you can tell him, that's what I mean, you can tell him that, but I don't think you have to tell him every single detail of everything you're doing. I think you're saying, we're getting some senior players. You know, but of course, the other thing about it is if he leaves, Jimmy, they'll have more money to use on those other players. That's a factor as well.
Yeah, these are quick questions. Which inventive Tigers assist was better? Dan Butler's Gaelic chip to Jack Riewoldt that went about 2.4 metres or Shane Edwards to Josh Caddy in the Dreamtime game? Which did you like more, Jack?
Butler.
Yeah, I thought Butler.
Yeah, Butler for me. All three of us have turned our chairs for Butler.
Yeah. And last question, is the top four locked? We've got Richmond, West Coast, Sydney and Melbourne.
For me, the top three is locked. Fourth is still up for grabs.
Who do you suspect might squeeze into that?
Geelong with their home games.
Jake?
Collingwood.
So you think that the top three is locked and the fourth will be...
Well, look, it's Geelong, Melbourne, Collingwood. Yeah, it's one of those sides.
I tend to favour that too. And that's all we have time for this week. A big thank you to you both, Jake and Jimmy, for joining us this week. Thanks also to Channel 7 and to Fox Footy for the audio we have used in this episode. And remember, you can ask our experts a question by sending an email to realfootypod@fairfaxmedia.com.au. And as always, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.